Mike Pence ends his presidential bid. Todd Rokita is publicly reprimanded for professional misconduct. Plus, mayoral races and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 3rd, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, former Vice President and Indiana Governor Mike Pence officially ended his presidential campaign, becoming the first major candidate in the Republican primary to do so. In announcing the end of his campaign, Pence said, "It's become clear to me this is not my time." He struggled to gain traction in national polls and raise money. His campaign had raised just $1.8 million by October, compared to frontrunner Donald Trump, whose campaign boasts $37.5 million in cash on hand, according to the Associated Press. Pence had not yet qualified for the third Republican primary debate scheduled for November 8th. With his exit from the presidential campaign, is there a political future for Mike Pence? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Oshia Boyd, editor-in-chief of Mirror Indy, and Leslie Bonilla Muniz, reporter for the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting digital editor Lauren Chapman, in for Brandon Smith. Elise Schrock, is Mike Pence's political future over?
I just think the writing's a little bit on the wall here. He failed to gain traction early. I mean, he didn't even announce his campaign in Indiana. I think that said a lot from the beginning of this. This is probably the best shot you're going to have. And if you're thinking 2028, the amount of groundwork that he would have to make up for that in his own home state with other congressional races, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. I mean, same question, Jennifer Hollowell. A lot of people have pointed back to January 6th as the moment that Mike Pence's political career may have actually already ended. Do you think that there is a political future for Mike Pence nationally or even in Indiana?
I don't expect that we'll see him on the ballot again, but I think that he will continue to play a significant role in politics across the country. I mean, he, as vice president, has built a lot of really important relationships with Republicans and leaders all across the country. And I think there are a lot of ways for him to play a role helping the party. And look, I mean, I think this election cycle was always going to be really challenging for him. But the fact that he got into it, I think, is interesting and important all of itself. But I think that we will continue to see him play a role.
Yeah. Oshia, I'm curious, what about you?
Well, I was just wondering, do you think people will listen to him, though, now? Because how Pence moves is not where the party seems to be right now. He's kind of an old-school Republican, get down, do the work. He doesn't have much personality, sorry.
What?
he does not have much personality. And many of the people who are leaders in the party at this point do have a lot of their firebrands. So do you think that people will still listen to him at this point?
Well, you see competing voices and, you know, a populist movement and things like that for sure. Number one, he certainly has a personality. I've been around him plenty of times, and he's a wonderful, pleasant person and has a great sense of humor that may not always get to be seen on the stage. But
I'll give you that.
But I do think that he continues to play a role. He has, like I said, he has relationships with significant organizations and significant leaders and has a lot of respect by them. Just because you may not go to the post in a presidential race does not mean you don't have an important role in the party and are, you know, well regarded and have ways that he can contribute.
I mean, Leslie, let's take this to you. What do you think? What do you think about Mike Pence's future in the state of Indiana?
I mean, I will say that a significant portion of, you know, the Indiana House and Indiana Senate come in through caucus. Mm-hmm. He could, if he so desired to seek a seat, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be a huge difficulty for him if he wanted to make, you know, a local comeback. I feel like he certainly could. The question is, what does he want to do?
Yeah. And it could be a little bit of anything. So time now for our viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. This week's question, will we see another political campaign from Mike Pence? Vote A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, will the chaos around choosing a U.S. House Speaker hurt Republicans in the 2024 elections? 77% of you said yes, and 23% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. In an opinion issued Thursday, the Indiana Supreme Court says Attorney General Todd Rokita violated attorney professional conduct rules in his remarks about Dr. Caitlin Bernard. He was publicly reprimanded by the court and ordered to pay a $250 fine. However, in a statement following the opinion, Rokita said he admitted to the misconduct to resolve the investigation. The Indiana Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission investigation into Rokita was filed in September. At the time, Rokita defended his remarks, which included calling Bernard an abortion activist acting as a doctor with a history of failing to report. No such history exists. The state Supreme Court's opinion says Rokita signed a sworn affidavit, made under penalty of perjury, admitting to misconduct, and acknowledged he could not successfully defend himself if the matter were tried. But in a statement, Rokita said he signed the affidavit to save a lot of taxpayer money and distraction. The Supreme Court agreed to a confidential conditional agreement, except Chief Justice Loretta Rush and Justice Christopher Goff. Rush and Goff rejected the agreement, believing the discipline to be too lenient based on Rokita's position as Attorney General and the scope of the admitted misconduct. Leslie, let's go ahead and start with you. You covered this yesterday. In Rokita's nearly 700-word statement, he also called the Disciplinary Commission's investigation a campaign by, quote, cancel culture establishment. Will we see any fallout for Rokita as a result of his response?
I don't anticipate any. I mean, the deal is done. He signed the affidavit. The Supreme Court issued that opinion. Mm-hmm. The only question is, we don't know what's in that confidential element. If there are some, you know, parts of the agreement that he doesn't hold up his end of the deal, then maybe we could see consequences. But that's not something that's publicly known.
But there is precedent, though, for the Supreme Court to order an issue of cause for someone to come back. And because this, what he has done is very egregious. To issue a statement like that on a public government website, mm-hmm. After you've admitted fault, and that was the mitigating factor for the ruling.
Under threat of perjury, admitting fault.
Correct. There is precedent in our the Indiana Supreme Court for that order of cause to be issued. And it's not a new issue. This is to go back and to reconcile what has been done, given his incredibly egregious behavior, not to mention that in that same report, he again called Dr. Bernard an abortionist, a pejorative term meant to attack her, which is the original thing that he was in trouble for to begin with. This is someone who obviously understands where the line is and is willing to step over it, and that's dangerous. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jennifer Hollowell, do you think that there are consequences, even if the Supreme Court doesn't do anything, do you think that there are consequences for Todd Rokita even within the Republican Party?
I don't expect that there's any fallout from that. I do think where there may be, and not insignificant, is if there are issues that come before the state Supreme Court again, and partially because the Chief Justice rejecting the agreement, I think, sends a very interesting message. All that being said, and I haven't spoken to him about any of this, but I would assume that if he could go back, he would do it differently.
Maybe. Oshia, kind of dancing around the point a little bit with it seems to me that we're kind of diametrically opposed, that either Todd Rokita perjured himself to an Indiana Supreme Court disciplinary commission, or he wrote a 700-word statement to spin that admission of guilt. I mean, do you think that especially for somebody who's running for office in 2024, do you think there are consequences to Todd Rokita's actions?
I don't think there's consequences necessarily. Have there been consequences to his actions up until now? So I think Mr. Rokita definitely is playing to his base. I think he is defiant to the point of he knows what he's doing. He's a smart man, right? So I think he's defiant because that's what he thinks people expect from him. His base expects that. So I wasn't surprised at all I wasn't surprised to get to the line and then kind of cross, but then kind of not. So this has been very interesting. I think this is not over. And it's kind of strange to me that we are still dealing with this all this time. It's been a very interesting thing to dig his heels into.
Not to mention that this is the second Republican attorney general that we have seen before a disciplinary court.
Yes.
I think, you know, will there be consequences? I mean, we've seen it before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Oshia, just to finish your point, for 2024, do you think that, is it more important for Okita to play to his base or for him to perhaps play within the constraints of the larger Republican Party?
I don't know. I think he's probably going to still do what he's been doing. It's been working for him. I think it's been working for him, so I can see him doing this. So I don't see any repercussions from his actions.
Yeah.
So,
Jennifer, just to come back for a second, I mean, kind of going back to Elise's point, that we've now seen two Indiana Republican attorney generals, attorneys general, put before the disciplinary commission of the Indiana Supreme Court. You know, does that affect trust in voters with Republicans at the helm of the attorney general's office?
Well, I mean, I think that's why we have elections. So if there are consequences, they come through elections, both primary elections, conventions, and general elections. And so that all is to be determined right now.
Makes sense. All right, moving on. Former President Donald Trump endorsed U.S. Senator Mike Braun in his bid to become Indiana governor. Braun had endorsed Trump in his presidential campaign back in September. Braun faces a crowded Republican primary for Indiana governor in 2024, with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, former Indiana Secretary of Commerce Brad Chambers, former Attorney General Curtis Hill, and Fort Wayne businessman Eric Doden. In a Truth Social post, Trump said Braun had his complete and total endorsement. In a statement, Braun thanked Trump and said he was incredibly helpful in defeating Democrat Joe Donnelly for his Senate seat in 2018. Jennifer Hallwell, given Trump's 2020 election performance in Indiana, will this endorsement set Braun apart in a crowded gubernatorial field?
Yeah, well, I want to start by acknowledging that I am on Brad Chambers' team.
Oh, okay, yes.
That being said, I think that most people expected that President Trump would endorse Senator Braun as he did when he ran for U.S. Senate in 2018. Mm-hmm. Certainly, President Trump has a lot of support among Republicans, so not a surprise that Senator Braun would be pleased to have his endorsement, and I'm sure will tout it strongly across throughout the course of the campaign. Mm-hmm. For the other candidates, I would say that you could point to cases where endorsements translate and some cases where they don't. Mm-hmm. And so you've got 6 months, and everyone just has to run their race.
I was about to say, does this endorsement being so early in the process, does that kind of mitigate the Trump effect for Braun?
Well, I think it answers the question right away, right?
Yeah.
So if anybody was sitting wondering if this would happen and what the impact would be, mm-hmm. it has now happened. So now you've got 6 months to run a campaign.
To try and make it up. I mean, yeah, at least.
It's also probably good to get the endorsement before you have an endorsement from someone who's possibly charged with multiple felonies. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see in this moment of time, sure, I think it helps. We've seen the polling, we've seen the effects of Trump in our state. Mm-hmm. How does that look over time? Mm-hmm. I think that's what we're going to have to look at. And a lot can happen, to your point, a lot mm-hmm. can happen in 6 months. It's a crowded field. We have, you know, incumbents running, we have newcomers, we have, you know, business folks. So this is going to say a lot, this particular race, mm-hmm. And then we'll see who the Democrats, you know, put forward to challenge once we get through that primary.
Makes sense. I mean, Leslie, kind of running to the same question, you know, does Trump help set Braun apart in this crowded race that, I mean, frankly, most of the candidates have pretty decent name recognition for the gubernatorial race?
Yeah, I think it certainly does. A lot of them are either, of course, leaning on the business credentials or on the social conservatism and, you know, a nod from Trump himself certainly is something that nobody else is going to have now. So mm-hmm. I would say yes.
Yeah, I mean, Oshia, basically the same question.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, I think it definitely adds excitement, right? Mm-hmm. I think it definitely adds excitement and it gives us something to talk about. But like to Elise's point, And to Jennifer's point, we still have a lot of time left, and we don't know what's going to happen with the court cases. We don't know what's going to happen with the, you know, with the candidates. So there's, it's like one of those things where everyone's like, oh, Trump has supported him now, so we can move forward. But and it gives, I guess, his base a little bit of like, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit of gravitas, a little bit of, yeah, our candidate, you know, is important. He's made it. He's the one. But again, we still have a long time to go.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
We shall certainly see. Don't forget, Indiana municipal elections are next Tuesday, and early voting is already open. So go vote. In addition to 11 school districts asking for referenda funding, several cities have tight mayoral races in the works. Republicans currently hold the most mayoral seats in the party's history, but could these races shake out gains for local Democrats? In Evansville, both Democratic and Republican candidates for mayor are women, fighting to become the first woman mayor of the city. The race is neck and neck, largely declared a toss-up between Democrat Stephanie Terry and Republican Natalie Rasher. Carmel's race for mayor has caught the attention of national news as Democrat Miles Nelson tries to turn the fast-growing Indianapolis suburb blue. He faces Republican Sue Finkman, who has the endorsement of outgoing seven-term Carmel mayor Jim Brainerd. Fort Wayne's mayoral race is a face-off between Republican and 20-year city council veteran Tom Didier and Democratic incumbent Tom Henry, who is running for his fifth term leading the city. And in Indianapolis, Democratic incumbent Joe Hogsett is running for his third term as mayor against Republican challenger Jefferson Shreve. What polling data is available suggests neither candidate has won Indianapolis voters on crime. O'Shea, do these races say anything broadly about Indiana as a whole?
Well, I think they definitely say Indiana is not a monolith. Mm-hmm. We often hear that the Hoosiers all think the same. We definitely don't. Mm-hmm. We definitely do not think the same. And I find it really interesting that in 2023, Evansville could have the first woman mayor. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things where when I saw that, I was thinking, really? Mm-hmm. Really? And then I got to thinking about Indianapolis. Have we ever had a female mayor? It's 2023. Mm-hmm. So kind of what's going on there? But again, all the cities, they were not monolithic. We don't all think the same. The issues, I think, are what's driving people to vote as well. Mm-hmm. And the issues that are important to one city, we can't say what happens in Indianapolis is important to Evansville, mm-hmm. which I think is often the case when we're at the State House. We think, oh, we all think the same. Mm-hmm. And I definitely feel as though these candidates are letting us know we don't all think the same. Now, whether we have a Republican stronghold, Democratic stronghold, that's still to be found out Tuesday.
Yeah. Leslie, I mean, even just talking about the money that has been put into these races, I don't remember the total off the top of my head for Indianapolis, but I know that Evansville has been getting a lot of support even from Indianapolis sent to that race. You know, what does it say about some of these races that we're getting this influx of money for these local races?
I think it's really interesting. Like the totals for the Indianapolis race, for example, are getting really up there. It might even, you know, break records. Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting that people are willing to invest so much in local races because, you know, we're kind of expecting turnout to be low. People talk about this election year as like, oh, it's just the municipal year. It's almost like for many people it's not happening. So I really think that those totals are even more staggering in comparison to how it's viewed.
Yeah. I mean, at least the Carmel race has been making some national waves because of the money that's going in. And kind of it seems that Carmel's being held up as a bellwether, which we know that title belongs to Terre Haute. But Carmel seems to be a bellwether as to whether or not Democrats can pick up significant gains in some of these local races and be a little bit of a bellwether for 2024. I mean, what are Democrats looking at across the entire state?
Sure. Well, I hope that Carmel isn't just a bellwether, and I think we'll be successful there. I hope it's a template for our party as a whole. Those candidates there have been working together. Mm-hmm. They have been knocking doors every single night. They have been doing the work, and they've been doing it by leaning on each other, by building a community, by building really strong infrastructure in Hamilton County, which is going to be what we need to infiltrate that type of historical stronghold. I think we're going to see some success, obviously, with Miles Nelson, but I think especially exciting thing for me is to see some of those other races in Carmel, to see a Sarah Draper winning, to see a number of other women and others on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Who are going to set not only be a bellwether for Hamilton County and the rest of the state, but also really set a really great template under the Democratic County Chair Dana Colbert there.
I mean, Jennifer, is there concern for Republicans really losing ground with some of these local elections? One of the reasons why Republicans have such a deep bench politically is because Republicans do dominate a lot of local elections.
Well, it certainly wasn't always the case.
Of course.
So showing my age in many ways here today, but 20 years ago, I ran a mayor's race program from the state Republican Party where we focused on 15 cities and flipped, I think it was 11, from Democrat to Republican. And back in 2003, the split between Democrat and Republican mayors across the state was very different than it is now. I like to think that that is what started this whole tidal wave, that Republicans now have more than they've ever had. Mm-hmm. But Republicans have more seats than they've ever had. Mm-hmm. It's not likely that we maintain that. Yeah. I think that, the pendulum swings mm-hmm. and local races are really about a lot of different things mm-hmm. and much harder to predict. So sometimes the party label isn't necessarily what's driving people. Candidates matter a lot. The environment matters a lot, and turnout is just really hard to predict. It's different than other kinds of races. So that I would say out of the gate. I do think it's exciting that we have some female candidates like Sue Finkham, who's going to win in Carmel. And we have a great kind of ticket in those races, and the suburban cities are really competitive. We're seeing that more and more. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to have a lot closer races than what we're accustomed to. Mm-hmm. But I think that's good. And I do think what we've seen already in absentee and early vote is that the turnout is up right now dramatically from what it was 4 years ago mm-hmm. in a lot of these communities. So people, competitive races do drive people out.
Yeah.
And so I think that's good. So we can have kind of a full vetting of you know, the issues and the factors. I think it's exciting.
Yeah. Competitive races are good for democracy.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, they are.
But I still think Republicans will do very well. But I would just say we're already at a historic high. I think it's harder to
go
up.
Yeah, it's hard when you're at the top to go down. Yeah. I mean,
so everybody needs to vote, especially the Republicans.
Everyone needs to vote, no matter political affiliation. I mean, even talking about these competitive municipal elections, do we think that any of this competition translates into voter turnout for 2024 or how things will shake out for Democrats and Republicans in 2024 in Indiana?
I mean, I think the fact that when you zero in at these individual communities, I mean, to Ashaya's point, like when you are looking at Indiana, we aren't a monolith. We have a lot of diversity. We have a booming Latino population in our state. And I think that speaks to like why our statewide elections should not be shoo-ins mm-hmm. For Republicans, and why we have a chance. I mean, when we look at these local areas, when we look at the full breadth of our state, we have a voter turnout problem, but it's not necessarily that we are as deep red as we think. Mm-hmm. But it is on. It is on party infrastructure, and it is on other organizations to build something that can lift that up. And I think if we take the lessons that we learn from these municipals and apply that, it could be very helpful as we move into the next cycle. But we're going to have to take a really hard look at our infrastructure and build off of that and not have a scarcity mindset mm-hmm. in doing so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts on the 2024 election? If these are the tea leaves,
I do think it helps. You know, you're kind of building. The reason we did what we did in 2003 was because we were trying to build a team going into the 2004 governor's race when Mitch ended up getting elected. And because of the work that we did, we had motivated people out there.
And finally, let's take those predictions for the Indianapolis and Carmel races. I believe we've already kind of heard them. Oshia, who do you expect to win in Indianapolis and Carmel?
Hogsett for sure, Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Carmel, not so sure. Sue.
Sue. All right.
Yeah.
Leslie, what are your predictions?
I would agree with that. I think I know there's a lot of money being spent on these races, but I would also predict
Hogsett
and probably Sue as well. That just seems like how the cards may be falling.
Yeah.
We can't forget in Marion County, though, there's also a Lawrence race. And I'm excited to see Doug Whitfield elected mayor of Lawrence.
Cannot forget about Lawrence. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Oshia Boyd, editor-in-chief of Mirror Indy, and Leslie Bonilla Muniz of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Lauren Chapman of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.